Good morning again, Trinidad and Tobago. 19 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock, top of the morning. A lot of things happening that has been affecting us in such a negative way as we switch over to our interview this morning with the former, just to give you guys, the former Works and Transport in Works and Transport and Infrastructure of the People's Partnership, former Minister Rambachan. Good morning to you, sir. Good morning.
Morning to you, Davey. Morning.
Good morning.
Thanks to all our listeners.
And welcome back. You know, how has the season been treating you, sir?
It's a very good season. Life has to be made beautiful.
I love how you take how you talk about it. It has to be made beautiful. And every morning you get up and you breathe in and you breathe out, you know, you feel that you're here to still have an opportunity to make a difference and to change things.
Yeah. So maybe before you begin, I just wanted 1 minute of your time.
Of course.
I really wanted to, and sincerely, this comes from my heart, it comes from my professional background, I want to congratulate you on the manner in which you have developed this program, on the professionalism and excellence with which you conduct it. It is not easy to conduct any talk show in a society that is politically and sometimes racially divided as ours. But to come across someone who has the capacity for achieving the sense of balance you do and giving the callers the kind of respect, even when you know you may disagree with them, it speaks quite a lot about you as a person. First,
thank you.
And also, I really appreciate very much the research you do going into your programs. In other words, you have not been coming on your program as someone who has not researched the topic. Even when you interview people, you know, I find that the detail with which you interview is something that is highly admirable. You know, when I look back at the 15 years I had on Freedom Radio when it was Panchayat, you know, I see a lot of what I attempted to do being exhibited by you in terms of your professionalism. So I really wanted to take the opportunity because I hear all kinds of comments being made by callers, you know, about the conduct of a program and so on. But being a talk show host is a very big challenge.
It is. And coming from you, I thoroughly and totally appreciate it. I thank you very, very much. One of the things I do, as I said, and I mentioned it in the past, is that I take pride in maintaining a sense of neutrality. And me being neutral is simply to deal with the issues of the day, not the political party that you secretly correct. Might support. But I often said, and I said it even when the then administration led the government, that it doesn't matter who sits at the helm of the government. If you do something good and I open the papers and it's nice, we will talk about it. If it's bad, we will also speak about it. There is no fear of favor and contradiction when we speak on the Morning Rumble. But good morning to you, and I thank you very much for that. I didn't know you was listening. I remember the last time I spoke with you, you know, we had conversations, but I do thank you for it. I have been accused.
I follow your program every morning.
I appreciate it. Thank you. As we get into the crux of things this morning, I'm going to ask you a very straightforward question, sir. Are you still an active member of the UNC?
I am a member of the UNC. I wouldn't say I'm a very active member of the UNC, but I would like to think of myself as someone who has adopted the position of an elder. And in a sense, you know, a mentor to people in the UNC who seek my advice from time to time.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I was about to ask you if you were called upon at any point in time within recent months to lend any sort of advice, especially that you are with the helm of Works and Infrastructure. Now we have Jillian John there. Were you reached out at all for any sort of advice as to how we can approach the situation going forward?
No, I've not been approached for any advice at any official level. But from time to time, you know, in conversation with a couple of the ministers, we will discuss matters that are of national importance.
Beautiful. When we look at what the Prime Minister would have stated in her position as opposition leader.
David, just let me make it clear, though. I'm not seeking any position in government.
No, I know that.
And
I know
I'm not
that.
Seeking public office. I made a decision at age 70. To gradually get out of the limelight of the politics, which I did, because I have a life plan for myself, and that is what I've been following.
And I congratulate you, and I thank you very much. As the Americans just said, we thank you for your service. I thank you for what you would have done for this country. As again, whether we agree on some of the things or not, we still thank you for lending your service to the country. Now, I didn't think in my wildest dreams that you were seeking political office. Last time I spoke with you, you did, you know, reiterate to me your need and your want for you know, your golden years and your retirement, and you seem to be enjoying it, and you look quite healthy and well. You know, you're not looking stressed. You're not looking stressed at all. I'm looking at you this morning, and I'm saying, this is how I want to be when I reach that age. I don't want to look stressed. So, as we look back in history and we come forward, we look at where the increase of the fines when it comes to traffic offenses. Now, remember, it was a traffic offense until the PNM government turned it into a violation. What's the difference? One, you can be arrested. There could be custodial sentences handed out to you, and violation, it's merely an offense where you pay a fine. It's a fineable offense, ticketable offense, as we say in Trinidad and Tobago. We would have known that under the Patrick Manning-led administration, we'd have seen increases in fines. We had a government, an opposition rather, that said, we are not going to do this. Dr. Ramachan, as we talk this morning, tell me your thoughts as to how the citizens should view politicians in light of saying one thing and then, in the, like a thief in the night, delivering something that seems underhanded under the guise of public safety.
And that is where, you know, I listened to one of your callers this morning on your question. He said very reluctantly and somewhat hurt that he had to vote against the UNC this morning from Chaguanas. And I don't think it is about, this is where we are politically immature in the country. I don't think it is about voting against your party as much as supporting your party in an overall sense as to whether you think they are going to be the best government. And having done that, it should not preclude you as a citizen of the country from standing up for or against that which you think is right or wrong. And I think this is where we are feeling. The level of blind loyalty is something that is causing a lot of regression in terms of the ability of this country to move forward, and also the ability of people at a mental level to make the kind of leap that we need to make in order to move from what we like to call a developing or undeveloped country to the developed status, where we begin to behave with the maturity, intellectual maturity, emotional maturity necessary in order to move forward. So I don't think, you know, that is about voting against your government. You voted for a government because the government presented a set of policies and programs which you believe would be in the interest of the country, which you believe was superior to that which was being offered by the opposition, the PNM then, and you got into office. Now that you got into office, it does not mean to say that if you feel that the government is doing something wrong by voting against it, you are against the government. And that is something that I think people are not making a clear distinction. As citizens, we have to understand we have a responsibility for this country as much as the government has a responsibility. But the government's responsibility to the country might very well be viewed different to how the citizens are viewing it at particular points in time. And this is what is happening now in terms of the fines. The Prime Minister is a different Prime Minister to what I knew her in 2010, 2015, and even after that up to 2020. The Prime Minister is now a very determined Prime Minister in terms of what she, in her mind, she thinks is clarity of what she wants to achieve for the country. And her latest statement about lawlessness in the country is a statement that has merit. There is a level of lawlessness in the country, not just on the road, but just over totally in the country, whether it's in terms of corrupt officers in the public service, corrupt policemen, corrupt this, whatever. There's a sense of lawlessness that needs to be corrected. I think in the case of the opposition, in the case of the traffic fines, the discussion in the public is how it's being framed. The opposition is framing it in political terms and in emotional terms, you know, as digging into the pockets of people and so on. The government is framing it in terms of a better society, a more a lawful society, law-behaving society, law-respecting society. And also, I want to look at it in this way also. This is a country in which no change comes about unless people understand and they feel the consequences of their actions. This has been a country where people have been getting away with a lot of things because there have not been consequences, people bearing the brunt of the consequences of their actions. And I think that this is something that we have suffered from because we are not a law-abiding group because we don't respect the law. People think they can get away a lot from the law. Whether I agree with the fines or not, Davy, I will put my position. I agree with the fines. I think deep down, though, some of the fines might, in my view, be excessive. I think that, you know, some of what has been put there, I think, for example, if you're driving on the road and somebody finds that you have a bulb that is defective,
mm-hmm.
they could be given a warning. They could be asked to go and change the bulb and come back to a police station and show that the bulb is changed and so on, rather than to put, you know, the fine into effect immediately when they find them on the road. I think that there's going to have to be some kind of review of how the fines are being applied in those circumstances. But in general, I want to say, having been a victim myself several times of bad driving on the roads, you know, I had a 9-year-old nephew who was killed in an accident by a truck on the Mosquito Creek while a whole band of them were going to see Brian Lara play cricket at Queen's Park Oval a couple of years ago. Mm. He was 6 years old and a budding pundit and cricketer. So, you know, Davy, you look at these things from the point of view of experience, and I want to say that I agree with the direction of the fines.
When we look at what these fines are doing, I beg to differ, because I fail to see. The Prime Minister in opposition did make some very, very startling remarks in terms of what I would want to say. Very prudent. I love what she was saying. She was talking about rehabilitation, educating drivers more, you know, getting those programs. Yes. And I love that. She talked about removing the demerit points. I kind of disagreed a bit. It could have been...
qualified.
A lot. However, we knocked the increase on punitive decisions by the previous administration to increase fines as a revenue earner. We now have a situation where we didn't even know where the 10% was coming from, and automatically, as this money was paid, these fines are imposed without... And to be honest, we're looking at a 100% increase. We're not Yes. looking at a 10% gradual increase. This is a slap in the face to citizens. Your Yes. thoughts?
Yes, the fines are doubling. And that was a shock, I think, for me also, that, you know, the extent to which the fines were doubled. But some of the fines were very low. For example, there are also increases now in customs rates and birth and death certificates and what have you.
But why? Why would that be that affect us? Why should we have raised the price of birth and death registration?
Well, it's the cost of doing business, I suppose, as the government begins to see it. You know, this is a country that is highly subsidized. And I think what we are beginning to discover as a government, and we'll have to discover it as a people, is that services do cost money. The balancing question is, do we get quality for the money that we pay for services? And this is where we need to have an uptick in terms of service quality in the public service as a whole. The public service servants are getting, whether they accept that it's enough or not enough, they are getting a raise. And that has to be borne, as it is being borne, by the taxpayers of the country, whether those taxes come from energy, it comes from the BIR, personal income taxes, the taxpayer is paying.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the government has to also justify, not only from the point of view of earning revenue, but also from the point of view of the service quality that is being delivered. And I think that, you know, we have a gap of about, about 30% of the people in this country, or 25% of the people in this country working in public sector, who really work. In the middle, you have about 50% who are sitting there, they're waiting for instructions. And then you have another 30% on the end, they are the loafers in the system. And one of the mistakes we have made in this country is romanticizing those loafers, as it were, because we're afraid that we're going to lose their vote. We are seeing a situation now, though, but the Prime Minister is not afraid of people saying you're going to lose votes by doing this or by standing up against this and that and so on. I think she's going very brave, very courageously. She's also, I think, taking the risk of doing all of this in the early part of her 5 years So that if she needs to come back with amendments and goodies to the population, she maybe come back with that in, you know, about the third, fourth year going down. So I think that she's also exercising a political strategy and a political risk at the same time.
The thing about it is, that is what I can agree with you on this morning. It could be out of the playbook where I am being this way in the earlys and I can come back and reduce things and show a change of heart. But I still think in a respected opinion that we were misguided. We were misled by an opposition that promised change, but did not really show us any avenue for diversification or for revenue earning, how she was going to sustain our economy, given the fact that we have a depleting oil and gas revenue taking place right now. When we look at what's taking place geopolitically on the landscape of the Venezuela-U.S. tensions, one has to wonder whether she made alignments with these United States government officials prior to her entering the April 20th general elections. But let's take a phone call respectively this morning. Hello, good morning.
Pleasant good morning once more, Devi. Dr. Rambachan. Devi, you will recall that I always say Dr. Rambachan is one of my mentors. Sometimes we agree to disagree and so on.
Yes.
And Doc, you will know that every now and again I call you on your advice on certain things. Doc, the reason I called this morning, you're on the program here and we're talking traffic. Traffic wardens, have they served their purpose and are they still relevant? I thank you.
Good question.
Very good question, and I think it's a relevant question. I think that traffic wardens are important. I think traffic wardens can continue to serve a very, very big role in the society. But I don't think that the traffic wardens are being managed or distributed around the country in the manner in which they were being distributed during my time. You know, I will give you an example. While I was the Member of Parliament for Tabaki, in the Gasparillo area by Petrotrin, every morning you would have this big pileup of traffic. And I placed traffic wardens there, and the situation improved immensely. Now, every morning again, because I go south every morning at 7 o'clock, I see the traffic again there, but I don't see the traffic wardens. But when you reach the Golconda on the highway, you see every 100 feet a 50 feet a traffic warden, about 10 of them line up on the road there. And I wonder what are they doing there? When in fact, somebody within that traffic warden unit, the management of it, has to identify the areas where you need these traffic wardens and utilize them properly. And they can be utilized. Traffic wardens can supplement the work of the police service and put the police service to do the kind of work that they should be doing. But and I think that there's a fall off there. And somebody, the minister, has to look into that in my view.
Hello, good morning. Respectfully, let's get your question. Good morning.
Good morning, Devi.
Good morning,
sir. Morning to Dr. Rambachan.
Morning.
I understand his point where he's saying that the Prime Minister is probably taking a hard stance. But Dr. Rambachan, it was said to the citizens months before, years before the election, that we are in an economic recession. Tighten your belts. And the Prime Minister said to us, they are fooling us. Present Prime Minister said they are fooling us. Even the comment concerning the taxes on licenses, she said, you know, the government is using that to generate revenue, and she's going to provide a free service for drivers that are. And today, we see a total reversal, stating that first thing, I've seen about 50,000 people on the breadline since this had. So it has nothing to, from my point of view, it has nothing to do with the Prime Minister adopting new strength. What it has to do with economic position they find themselves in by making promises to the citizens and getting into office and realize, but wait, defined, because she said to us that the country was broken. She said to us that they keep borrowing money and there is no money in the economy, and you promised public servants 10%. And now that you're getting, telling us there is no money and have to pay people for 10%, the only alternative to generate revenue in this budget is taxation. So I don't see that as being hard. I see that as fooling the population, able to hoodwink the population based on the information to try to make the previous administration look bad and you would look good. And now when you get into office, the reality hits you that, hey, and now everybody's singing the song you're singing. We should be patriots. and understand that the Trinidad and Tobago have no money. And civil servants, as you say, functioning.
All right.
But is it civil servant at 10%?
All right.
Yeah, yes. I'm not singing any patriotic. In fact, what I said that citizens must be able to, even when they support a party, to stand up against what they see to be wrong. That was one of my problems when I was in government also. As a minister of government, I can say publicly today that I stood up within the government if I felt that something was not going right and put my opinion forward. And at the end of the day, I was a member of cabinet and a team player, and I had to go along with certain things. But I used to get amendments in terms of where we go. But you have to stand up. Now, David, the thing about in terms of what he's saying, yes, the government made a lot of promises. The opposition then, the UNC, made a lot of promises. And that is another thing about this country. The promises were made in at a time when the country was really in a bad state under the PNM, and people fell for it and felt that something could be different. And that is where, you know, we are not discerning enough as a population. That is where we didn't question enough, you know, how is this going to come about? Yes, towards the end, the media did a very good job in questioning the government as to where you're going to get the money to fund all of this you're doing. The members of the then government also questioned it. And now we are seeing that in the changed economic circumstances, the revenue is not there. And what is happening here now, therefore, is that the government has run the risk of losing points and in terms of trust and credibility in the eyes of the population, and that includes their own supporters. How is the Prime Minister going to rebuild this trust? How is the Prime Minister going to rebuild this credibility? Is going to be a task that she faces. Now, the other point I don't want to overlook is this. If you are law-abiding citizen on the roadway, then you have nothing to fear, you know.
I said that this morning. I said that this morning. I said that this morning.
If you're a law-abiding citizen, you have nothing to fear. You know, people, for example, there was a caller on your program said, you know, that he got a fine of $1,000 because he was driving on the right-hand lane and when he should be driving. You remember that
yes,
caller?
Yes.
Well, again, he admitted that he should have been on the right-hand lane. And we do have that. We have a lot of people driving at 30 miles an hour on the lane they shouldn't be driving holding back the traffic and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that might be an absurd example to give, but the point is, if you are law-abiding and you follow the offences, then follow the traffic laws, then you are not going to be a subject of these fines. But I still maintain that I think that the police, in applying the law, they have to have use some discretion. You cannot be black and white in it, you know, because you could be driving down the road and your windshield wiper stops working or your bulb blows or something happens. So, you know, it is like that. But I saw, for example, they have leaking oil as one of the fines. How about all those vehicles that the EMA is supposed to be tracking where all the smoke comes in your face while you're driving from trucks and so on?
Mm-hmm.
How would that happen? David, I drive on the road, I'm telling you, every morning from Chaguanas to Faizabad. And I am driving at the speed limit that I'm supposed to drive. But passing me are the biggest trucks. And the speed at which they pass me is about 20, sometimes up to, I believe, about 30 kilometers above
your car shake on the road.
Yeah, it shakes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people may not believe that, but that's true. It shakes. So how do you have to deal with those people? And, you know, I asked a truck driver one day, because I followed him, believe this or not, I followed him to the yard where he went to deliver his material. And I talked to him, I talked to the owner. And you know what the response was? Well, these guys have to go to National Quarries to pick up a load in the morning. And if they don't make 3 loads for the day, I can't make profit with my trucks. Hmm. And they are paid by the load. So they are running these trucks at a speed to make these 3 loads. And then they leave home at 2 o'clock in the morning to get up there for 4 o'clock in the morning to get the first load and so on. So there's a kind of irresponsibility also on the part of some of these owners of these trucking companies and so on that we have to look at. So this is all part of the context that we have to talk about. But at the end of the day, our lives are threatened. by this kind of behavior and the search for profit, if you want to put it as well as that.
And just to add to what you're saying, bear in mind that these trucks are supposed to go at 65 kilometers per hour. 65. Hello, good morning. Quickly, please.
Good morning, Mr. Mori, and good morning to Dr. Rambachan.
Who's this? Kadeem?
Kadeem.
Yes. Kadeem, I want to congratulate you, man. You add a lot of value to the program by your incisive thinking.
Yes. I wanted to share some data and show the correlation of when you're making decisions, how it's supposed to be in tandem, right?
Mm.
This year, Davey, the road debt is 108.
So far.
Last year, around the same time, the road debt would have been 122, right? So 122 persons would have died last year. So there's a reduction. So if you are saying that there's lawlessness in the country, and I agree to an extent there is, you must be able to put things in place to curtail that. So for example, Dr. Rambachan said vehicles are speeding. Of course, there should be a police officer or persons, maybe a traffic warden, who have the power to be visible, to be able to find these persons who are engaging in such. It makes no sense to increase fines when you're not going to put things in place to assuage the issue. Now, there was a bill, I think it was 2017, and this bill sought to make operable camera system in which you can charge individuals.
Yes.
All right. Maybe that is an avenue the government have to look at in terms of finding these persons who are engaging in lawlessness. Because you cannot just use it as a broad brush when the data shows something different. There are persons who will be engaging in lawlessness, Davey, but you have to get them off the road. There must be persons or systems in place to get them off the road. And that is what I want to share. Before I go, I want to share something with you again, Davey and Dr. Rambachan.
But just
our political system in this country is one in which if you were to go against the system, you can see yourself being thrown in the political cemetery. While you can object to certain things, more or less you will have to toe the party line. So for example, as I shared that data with you, that data that I shared with you, that a reduction in murder, and of course the TTPS will put out their information which in terms of RTEs, road traffic accidents, and I suspect there will be a reduction there as well. It goes in tandem. And I also have a next shot, but I can't read out that one for you.
Mm.
It's supposed to say that here what, because of that data, I'm seeing there I can raise the penalties maybe 25 or 30%. You can't just implement a policy wrap of 100% on the populace without taking into consideration what I just shared with you. It's a contradiction.
All right. Okay, hold on, Kadeem. Dr. Rambachan wanted to mention something to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he lost me because I'm trying to follow so many different points.
That he is bringing up. All right, yeah, so with that being said, Kadeem, you know, to Dr. Rambachan as well, I do not understand how a 100% increase of road fines for these violations, because they are not offences, it's still a violation where you pay your ticket, and failing to do so, you can be flagged. When you go to, at the end of the day, if you take out a license for 10 years, the government doesn't get that revenue for 8 years because you don't need to go license officer to renew no permit, no license. So how is these harsh fines going to change driver behavior? How is this going to educate drivers in driving better on the roads? Where is the defensive training in increasing of the fines? That's the point I want to make. Thanks, Kadeem. Dr. Rambachan.
And that's an excellent point you're making, whether you should send people back to defense driving schools as part of the penalty and what have you. But if you see, there's another aspect to all of this, and it has to do with the licensing offices.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in point 14, people go there. I mean, I'm going to say this publicly. I know of one guy who couldn't read properly.
Hmm.
And he went, and for $3,000, he was able to get his license. He was able to get his license in San Fernando. The same thing is happening. People talk openly about it.
Yes.
I went in to San Fernando a couple of years ago to have my pickup inspected. And I'm in the line. I'm a former minister of government. I'm still an MP. And I'm in the line. And a guy comes up to me with a piece of cloth. And he says to me, you know, why you have to wait only in line for $700? We can do all this for you, you know. So do you tell me that the people in the pit, the licensing officers, don't know what is going on with those touts who are in the line?
Of course they do.
Right? So that's, I'm sure. So if people are getting away with things like this, that is part of the lawlessness also that has to be dealt with. Now, Divi, you know, Kadim raised the question of cameras and taking pictures and able to charge people. Are they higher? While we were in government, I was minister. That system was in place there. It has been tested and everything.
Yes.
It had been tested, and I don't know why it is not has not been implemented, but it was done, and everything was ready. There's a point I wanted to make to you, Divi. Kadim talked about figures, you know, 122 to 108 and so on, a difference of 14. Now, the police service is saying, for example, that crime is down, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But they are using the statistic mainly of reduction in murders to show that the crime is down. I don't agree with that. You have to categorize murders in the country, those to gangs, those to domestic violence and what have you, to really understand the whole picture. But when you read the newspaper and you gather the evidence and people talking on the street, which is different from what the official statistics might portray, I do not think that crime has, in the eyes of the population, has gone down in the way that is being presented. You can't have the snatching that is taking place on the roads, the way that people are targeting people after they go into banks and come out and suddenly, you know, the money is gone. I mean, I think it was very stupid to take $380,000
out of
a bank in Siparia and do at $50,000. But there seems to be some link between personnel in the banks and what is happening here, or personnel in companies and the bandits outside knowing what is happening. But I do not think that crime has gone down in the way that people are saying. The home invasions continue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Everything, the cars are being taken away and so on. So, you know, we got to be very careful when we kind of placate and pat ourselves on the back as a police service and say the crime is on. Now, I want to congratulate the new commissioner of police. I really want to congratulate him. Something he is doing with respect to the drug interdictions and the large drug fines that are taking place that is different to what has happened before. I think that the guy is doing a good job. I think he came from the intelligence section of the police service. And I think he's applying that very, very, very well. And if he continues to develop the management team that he has there, I think that he's on the pathway to some degree of success.
I can go there with you as well. I don't like the fact that we credited the radar for that drug haul out in Kearney. I think that was misleading. Hello.
Yeah, I have my doubts about that.
Pleasant morning, David.
Good morning, Morales. Quickly.
Pleasant morning to Mr. Rambachan, man. Hello, Dr.
Morning,
Rambachan.
Morning, Morales.
I would have looked at, you know, earlier today somebody suggested that we have we have 1 point per offense, and I think that's a good suggestion, 1 point per offense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And moving forward, as I said, the traffic wardens need to really be distributed in a meaningful way, so they need to really visit the different areas of the country and really deploy them so we'll have more effective service of them. And I am supporting that was an initiative of your government the first time, and I support it because you see the police, when I look at the job of our police, to tie up the police with the traffic direction was a very good initiative. So they need to improve. I will support improving the number of traffic wards and deploying them in a more meaningful way, because up at Princeton here too, they have some deployed at a Masilla Junction, sometimes 6-7, and I don't see the need for that among there. We should have flow of traffic going in one direction. We should don't really have much. They don't have any directional duties to really do as such.
All right.
So have a blessing, Dr. Right. Machan, and may God give you attention to continue to support and give us ideas and suggestions, man. Bye.
Okay, bye. Hello, good morning. Quickly, as we head to the news, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Davy. Good morning, Karantabi. Good morning, Dr. Rambachan, Princess Tom.
Morning.
Quickly, Dr. Rambachan. Duplication. You have police, municipal police, and traffic wardens. Why can't we use, instead of saying traffic wardens, just to refer to them as wardens with some expanded duties and better management, and also station these wardens at every licensing office in Trinidad and Tobago, at least to curtail and prevent touting. Thank you, Princess Tom.
That's not a bad idea, you know.
But you know, David, that's the point, eh?
Yeah.
Our people have great ideas to solve problems, you know. what we need to do and what is missing in this country, and this is why sometimes I miss the politics, because every month I will find myself in one area of my constituency, you know, talking to people. And that's how I got many great ideas also as a minister, particularly in local government, right? Mm. Particularly in local government. But we have to, okay, so the UNC, for example, have Monday night meetings and they had consultations. And I think they need to reintroduce that and keep going with that. As we move to your news, I think that the UNC faces a very difficult task in terms of how they are communicating with the people.
Indeed, sir.
Right? And if they fail as a government, it will be failing again because of a failure to communicate. Communication, effective communication, equals building trust and credibility, or reducing trust and credibility. And I think that photo ops are not going to get you where you want to be.
Dr. Rambachan, I have a question I want to ask you very, very quickly. Would you prefer a government that is honest or one that is transparent?
I think both are necessary. Both are necessary. Honesty and transparency go together.
Well, here's what... Okay, go ahead, finish.
Yeah, no. If you're transparent, it means that you have a level of honesty that you're...
There you go. But I will take the transparency first before honesty, because you can be honest with me. I ask you a question. Dr. Rambachan, did you put that there? And you said yes.
But you're not transparent, yeah.
But you wasn't transparent with me. But if you come out and you give me transparency, you know, well, Dave, I put that there, but there's the reason why. I mightn't like it, but you tell me. So I take that. And I think
the reasons for my action,
Yes. So I take what you say, that this government lacks the tenacity and the skill set in terms of effectively communicating with their citizens like they did in the Monday Night Forum. They're no longer doing it anymore. And that is why Stuart Young, the former prime minister, gets a nudge with me, because before he left for this country to go and meet Marco Rubio in Jamaica, he spoke to the country. He spoke as soon as he landed in Piako. He had a meeting. And you find Dr. Rowley, while his information may have been credible in the sense of where we were economically, his delivery was out of touch with the citizenry, badly.
Okay. And although we lost elections in 2015, Davey, when I was Minister of Foreign Affairs and Minister of Communication also, and we traveled with the Prime Minister, for example, you will find that before we left, a statement was made to the people.
Yes.
And when we came back in Piako, we would have presented a report there in the airport. And Gideon Hanuman Singh used to be the communications officer with me. And we'll prepare that report, believe it or not, sometimes on the eve while we are traveling in that plane to come back, so the Prime Minister can have it reviewed and presented at the airport. And that is the kind of thing you're talking about. But that takes a different kind of... commitment when you're in a position.
Dr. Rambachan, we have to leave it there. I thank you very much for waking up this morning and chatting with us here.
I'm up at 4:30 every morning.
Well, you and I in the same boat. I just had to dive out at 4:30 to get here
to be. Thank you for the opportunity.
And I am grateful.
It's really appreciated.
All right. So have yourself a safe day and enjoy your travels on the roads today. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you, David.
All right.